From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña with your state and local news update. A pickup truck exploded in downtown Juneau on Monday night, but the Juneau Police Department does not believe the fire was suspicious or a crime. A witness says it sounded like a fireworks factory exploding.
They make this kind of sound that sounds like just rockets shooting up in the air repeatedly. And then I just saw this big fire, you know, all the way from my house.
Noah Williams says he called 911 from his home near Cope Park. Then he says he grabbed his camera and ran to F Street, across from the laundromat and the old Bill Ray Center.
I mean, it was a little scary running into that general area, but they seemed to have it mostly under control by the time I got there. So props to CCFR. You guys rock.
Firefighters were already putting out the fire. There were also filled propane tanks in the back in the pickup truck that they were trying to get to keep from exploding.
It looks like maybe one of the propane tanks had blown, or two of them had blown. I'm not sure. And then the safety valves had kicked in for the rest of them. I'm pretty sure they have, you know, like an overpressure valve. And it appeared that the one that was on fire when I got there was just venting.
On Tuesday morning after the fire, a woman who did not give her name grabbed a blanket and a few clothes from the burned-out truck still parked on the street. She said she was in the pickup's cab when the fire started and escaped uninjured. The fire marshal's office says a propane-fueled heater tipped over and ignited the other items in the truck. They ask people to call them if they witnessed the start of the fire Monday night. If witnesses have pictures or video, they would like to see them as well. And voters reelected Ketchikan's representative Dan Ortez by a wide margin, returning the independent for another 2 years representing House District 36. KRBD's Eric Stone looks at why the former schoolteacher might have performed so well in a Republican-leaning district that supported President Trump by 14 points.
A sizable majority of voters cast their ballots for Republicans at the top of the ticket. President Donald Trump, Senator Dan Sullivan, and Congressman Don Young each racked up double-digit margins in the district that stretches from Metlakatla to Ketchikan to Wrangell and parts of Prince of Wales Island. Teresa Darlene Heitman says she was one of those Republicans. She says she's religious, conservative on social issues, and generally fits the profile of the mainstream GOP.
When I look at the issues, I'm all against abortion, and I've been a Republican all my life, so I'm just kind of like going to probably do my Republican thing.
She spoke to KRBD on Election Day at the polling place where she cast her ballot in person. But there was one race where she broke from her party, her local House race.
I did vote one independent because he's my buddy, and I know him very well, and he's good.
Yeah.
And the mudslinging did not change my mind at all.
Would you mind sharing who that is?
Dan Ortez. Yeah. Yeah, I really like him.
State Republicans didn't hold their fire in this race. Leslie Becker, the conservative Republican challenger, launched attack ads in mailers and on the radio, calling Ortez a liberal ally of Democrats. But those attacks didn't seem to land with voters like Heitman. She says she's a former Alaska Marine Highway System worker, and she sees Ortez as an ally of the ferries.
Because Southeast Alaska is, you know, the economy is already getting ready to die, and the ferry helps us a lot. All the transportation and the things that go on the ferries, people do not realize how important it is and how much it benefits Southeast Alaska.
And there was another factor at play. Becker polled poorly in communities with large Alaska Native populations, and that helped Ortez score a 21-point victory. He garnered about 80% of the vote in Metlakatla, Heidelberg, and Saxman. Metlakatla resident David R. Boxley says that's due partly to Becker's controversial blog posts that touted resource development as a cure-all for social ills like addiction and alcoholism in rural Alaska Native communities.
I mean, I'd be naive to say that his opponent's comments weren't a factor.
Becker rejected any notion that her writings were racist. But the Tsimshian artist says Alaska Natives didn't just not like Becker. Many looked favorably on Ortez's three-term track record.
He listens to us, and he knows us. He's known us for a long time.
Neither candidate was born in Alaska. Becker moved here 4 years ago and recently completed a term on Ketchikan's school board. Ortiz came to Ketchikan in 1969 as a child and has been a fixture in public life. He often addresses Ketchikan's city council. He knocks on doors, and he says his 21-point win, his largest margin ever in 6 years, speaks to the power of being close to his constituents.
District 36 voters know who I am. I've been here a long time. They know Dan Ortiz, and evidently, from what they've seen so far, that they're relatively pleased with the service that I provided.
And as a corollary, Ortiz says his choice to run as a nonpartisan independent makes it easier to reach voters on both sides of the political aisle. In the House, Ortiz wielded influence as a vice chair of the powerful Finance Committee. He says he's hoping to return to that role, but it's unclear whether Republicans will have enough members for a caucus or there will be a return to the bipartisan coalition that Ortiz had been a member of.
You know, I'm pretty confident that I'll be part of a majority, but confident is different than actually seeing it happen, so we just got to wait and see what those two results are.
So what's in store for House District 36's Republican Party? It's too early to say. Neither the local GOP chair nor Becker would comment for this story. But like most of Alaska, the Republicans continue to wield more influence than any other party. They remain the second largest voting bloc after undeclared and nonpartisan independents. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
The Petersburg Pool, which closed down after a fire, could reopen with some temporary fixes. KFSK's Angela Denning has more.
The year 2020 has been hard on Petersburg Swimming Pool. There have been a series of closures, starting with a cold weather breakdown in the spring, then a COVID shutdown in the summer, and then an electrical fire in the fall. But all appears not to be lost.
We're getting much closer to potentially having the pool reopened.
Borough Manager Steve Giesbrecht.
Everything on a temporary basis has been fixed. That includes heat of the water as well as in the building. And we've gone through all of the electrical systems. We've moved our network back to where it belongs, and I think it is up and running.
Giesbrecht says there is now electricity running to the Aquatic Center, and the pool's temperatures are warming up to meet what's needed for swimming. The pool had been without electricity for about a month. Getting the lights and heat back means there is less of a chance for any freezing problems this winter.
The facility, like I said, is warm, no condensation, and we think we've got it protected pretty well right now.
After initial fire damage assessments were done, the borough had reported a permanent fix for the pool could be 9 months away. Although that's likely still the case, temporary solutions could get the doors opened much sooner. The borough had mechanical and electrical contractors visit the site, as well as an electrical engineer. Giesbrecht says there's still a problem with the HVAC units and the ambient temperature in the aquatic center. There's also a problem with the fire system in that part of the building, and the borough has ordered a replacement.
So if we do reopen the facility, we do it without a fire system, and we really have to understand the rules behind that.
Giesbrecht says there would have to be an evacuation plan and more staff training if the pool were to run without a fire system in place, even temporarily. He's asked the borough's fire marshal, Ryan Weldy, to talk with the state's fire marshal about those details. The borough continues to work with the insurance company, Liberty Mutual, which is covering most of the costs. Despite the uncertain timeline, Petersburg School District plans to restart swim classes once the pool does reopen. School board president Sarah Holmgren says the closure hasn't been easy.
It's hard because it is an outlet for both kids and adults, even during the pandemic. And so we're, you know, just like the rest of the community, very disappointed, but we'll be hopefully optimistic.
The school district partners with the Petersburg Borough on the Aquatic Center. The school district pays for the electricity, while the borough oversees management and maintenance of the facility. The school district includes swimming as part of its curriculum at the elementary and middle schools. The district's recent swim instructor, Dan Van Swearingen, moved out of town last spring, and the district planned on replacing him until the pandemic made that difficult. Superintendent Erica Kluepainter says they created a temporary swim program with another instructor that was about ready to start up when the fire hit. She says they'll still plan on starting swim classes again as soon as the pool reopens.
We will be moving forward with instruction in there as soon as we possibly can. In whatever form that might take, but we're definitely very committed to doing that.
Kluepainter says while other activities were shut down because of the pandemic, they were able to keep the pool open. The district worked with the Petersburg Medical Center to get guidance on how to hold swim classes with appropriate protocols in place.
That was Angela Denning in Petersburg, and this is KTOO News.